Breakfast the next morning, Rafe waved ecstatically from the entrance to the dining hall while I was in the omelet line. I wanted to run away, but our friendship had just come back, and it was tentative, and I didn't want to ruin that.
"Sleep well?"
he asked. I shrugged. "Fine, I guess. Not long enough." We went through the line. I ordered an omelet with bell peppers. Rafe ordered one with ham, which is weird since he's Jewish. Then we went to the fixin's station and I loaded up on ketchup and Rafe walked away. I didn't pick up on the vibe until I got to his table. He didn't look up at me.
"You're doing it again."
"I'm not." He pursed his lips.
"Yeah, but you kinda are. The closet thing last night freaked you out."
"Sorry. Why do I even?" He shook his head.
"No, not at all. No, I'm tired, bud."
I tried to casually punch him in the shoulder to show I was cool with a little contact. Rafe looked at me and I saw the hurt in his eyes, and I realized I wasn't the only one out on a ledge.
"Really,"
I said softer.
"I'm really okay, I promise."
This finally got him to smile.
"We should have a chaperone."
I laughed.
"Definitely. That would definitely be normal. Excuse me, but we're going into a gay guy's closet to scare him. Will you accompany us?"
Things got better and we joked about Donnelly, who apparently came into Albie and Rafe's room this morning and told them a parable about a ship that arrived at a port late. It was pretty clear this was in reference to a complaint about a missing lab report from Albie's science teacher, but somewhere in the story, Donnelly got lost in his metaphors.
The point is, you gotta ride a lot of boats, Albie, Donnelly said,
and Albie assured him that he would, in fact, take a lot of boat rides.
"What are you up to tonight?"
Rafe asked.
"We're thinking about a little scanner pong."
Scanner pong was this absurd game Albie and Toby had made up that involved listening to a police scanner Albie had in his room and drinking when certain words were said.
"I can't," I said. "I was going to see Hannah. Another time."
"Uh-oh, big date," he said, like he was totally okay with it, but there was something so not okay about having this conversation that I couldn't look at him. I speared a loose piece of bell pepper with my fork. When I didn't answer right away, I heard him exhale.
"Sorry," I said. "I don't know what the right thing is. I don't want to lie."
He violently speared a piece of omelet on his plate, then stuffed it into his mouth. He chewed slowly, not looking at me. When he finished chewing, he looked down at his plate.
"We can't keep doing this to each other."
I was so glad we were alone at a table and that no one was nearby. I lowered my voice.
"You brought it up." "Well, I shouldn't have."
"Yeah, probably not." He shook his head.
"I just don't think I can do it anymore," he said.
I couldn't look at him.
"Wait, are you breaking up with me as a friend?"
"I really don't think—"
"Why can't you love me?"
Rafe blurted. The words settled on the table in front of us, little specks of something toxic spoiled. I clenched my jaw so hard I was afraid my teeth would crumble.
"We've been over this," I said. "I know. I get that I brought it up, but please don't talk about Hannah in front of me. I know it's wrong, but you have to get that you're magenta, and I really, really, really like magenta."
I blushed, and I felt my body heat up remembering the dream I'd had. It was all off limits, and that sucked.
"Use your words," Rafe said. "Seriously, you cannot not say something here." I said, struggling to get the words out. I took a deep breath.
"I don't know what to say."
"Say anything, please."
I closed my eyes. My heart was pulsing, aware that I couldn't sit there not speaking forever. I finally forced myself to talk.
"Look, I'm magenta and you're actually, well, you're lavender, I guess."
I lowered my voice.
"And I like lavender."
Rafe's eyes widened slightly. My heart sped up. Lavender is kind of becoming my best friend again, to mix metaphors even further. So just, I don't know, I'm sorry. I won't mention Hannah. I get that it's messed up, so you will not hear that name again. Rafe put his head down and picked up his fork and seemed like he was consciously trying to not react as he ate some of his omelet, but I could see in his face a glimmer that told me that I'd said the right thing. Chapter 21. Classes, baseball, Model Congress, and studying had been enough to keep me occupied most hours of the day, and now there was Hannah, and my renewed friendship with Rafe, and calls home to check in on Mom, who still seemed sad, and Luke, who rarely said anything of note, but got pissed if I didn't call at least 3 times a week. Everybody wanted something from me, and some days it felt like I was being pulled in 30 different directions, and I wondered how anyone figured out how to be all things to all people without going insane. The next Friday night, Hannah and I were at Bryce's favorite diner in Natick, sitting at a table in the back. Hannah had a pumpkin spice decaf latte, and I was working on a cup of green tea, thinking about how most of my teammates were probably knee-deep in beer right now at some shindig or other. Hannah was wearing her hair up and tied in a ponytail, and her skin looked particularly soft and lustrous. I couldn't look away, and I didn't want to say anything, but I was definitely thinking about spending a little time in Gretchen with her.
"There's a girl, person, at Lana who is thinking about transitioning," Hannah said, sipping her latte. "Becoming a boy."
"Wow," I said. She cocked her head.
"I haven't quite figured you out in terms of, like, politics yet," she said.
"Huh? Why does that matter?" She narrowed her eyes at me.
It matters," she said. "I know you're a nice guy and I know you're thoughtful, but are you, like, okay with people of various genders and such?"
I shrugged. "Well, I'm actually doing an argument in Model Congress about how religious freedoms are under attack by gay rights advocates." Her mouth was a perfect O. I waited a couple extra seconds, as long as I could, before I cracked up. "I'm kidding," I said, smiling. "Well, not about the argument, but I was assigned that. I don't believe that kind of thing, not at all." She exaggeratedly wiped her shiny forehead with the back of her hand.
"Phew," she said. "That was scary for a second."
"So if I were a transphobe, that would be, like, a deal breaker?"
"It wouldn't be a good thing," she said.
"Well, I definitely believe that there are more things under the sun than we understand, and people are just people. Live and let live and all that."
"Phew,"
she said again, smiling. I sipped my drink, which was getting a little cold, and something occurred to me. It was something she'd said to me, and it was the kind of thing that typically, if someone said it to me, I'd ignore. But this was Hannah, and more, I was learning to trust her. And more than that, she was melting me a bit on the inside. My throat always felt jittery when I was around her, because part of me couldn't believe a girl this beautiful would want anything to do with a huge goober like me. So I took a huge leap. "You remember when you said we should be the kind of friends who say things to each other?" I asked. This got her attention, and she put down her latte.
"Sure."
"So I don't know if what I'm going to tell you is a deal breaker, but I will say I hope it isn't a deal breaker because I really like you, Hannah." She smiled the sweetest, juiciest smile. Even without lipstick, her lips were so soft and red.
"I really like you too, Ben. Tell me things. What's up?"
"So I've actually never told anyone this. It's something that happened last year, and it's quite a story, and I won't bore you with the whole thing, but..." "So,
tell me,"
she said. I gulped. "Last semester, I had this thing with my best friend at the time. He's gay, and, well, I'm straight, but, like, I felt, you know, really close to him.
We connected on such a deep level, and I just wanted to be with him, which was weird because I can't believe I'm telling you this. Nothing about her expression made me feel like she was about to judge me, and she nodded as if to say, go on. It was weird because I'm definitely, like, not into boys, and not like one of those guys who lies to themselves and then dreams about Justin Bieber. He's a person, right? She laughed.
I think so.
I mean, not gay, like, actually not gay. Other than this one guy, I haven't ever thought of guys that way. And girls, I do. I stopped, embarrassed at how forward I could be when I let myself. It was like she was bringing it out in me.
You're hilarious, she said. I love this you telling me things thing.
I averted my eyes, well aware that I was way past the point of no return by now. So we were together once. Twice, I guess, if I'm being completely honest, and I am.
Wow. Did you like it?
I shrugged. I didn't think this was the time to lie, but it also probably wasn't the time to go nuts with the whole I fooled around with a guy and I really liked it angle either. She took a sip of her drink and rolled her shoulders back like she was worried about her posture.
I actually think it's awesome that you're open enough to explore that with a guy. So many guys, you know, they think about it, but they act like the thought never crossed their minds.
Could you with a girl? She seemed to ponder that, and she made a face.
Not with my best friend, but that's just because she had a boob job. I prefer my ladies au naturel.
I laughed.
Me too.
How lucky was I? I had this hot, thoughtful girl who was into me, who was beginning to actually know who I was, and she liked me anyway.
Just so it's said, and it's not hanging out there.
Yes, I've noticed you leave so many things unsaid.
She stuck her hands out toward me, and I took them in mine.
Just so it's said, you doing that is like the opposite of a roadblock for me. I think it's awesome that you have that side of you. I sometimes think I could be pansexual, but I'm probably more pansexual in my brain than in reality, you know?
I nodded.
Where are things with the friend now?
She asked.
We kind of went through a weird thing. Long story, but we're friends again. Friends with boundaries.
Good, she said. Because I'm a liberal gal, but I'm not sharing you with a boy.
We did go back to my car, and I started the engine but didn't leave the spot. I took her head in my hands and pulled her face toward me. The kiss was breathless and deep, and I could feel myself needing to feel her skin against my skin, and I must have made a noise without meaning to that expressed some of that, because then she made a noise too. I could see people walking by along the streets of downtown Natick, but I was drunk on this girl and I didn't care.
I'm ready for more, she said.
I nodded and nodded.
Yeah, I said.
The back door to the theater at Lana Grace had a broken lock, Hannah told me. I was afraid we'd get caught and I'd get in trouble for being there, but she said it was really her ass on the line. That didn't make me feel all that much less nervous, but just seeing her without a coat at the diner had lit something in my chest, and I had driven all the way to Lana Grace in what felt like an epic haze. We crept behind the theater in silence and anticipation. Hannah pushed the door open, and there we were. Backstage, black curtains draped everywhere and various wooden cutouts blocking my path in all directions. My heart pulsed like crazy. She turned on the lights, and the buzz of electricity was so loud that she immediately turned them off.
If we have to hide, it's easier if it's dark, she whispered.
She took my hand and led me around the corner to the front of the stage. On it was a real live car from the 50s, blood red with lightning strikes painted across the sides.
Grace,
she said, doing a cute arm dance with both her index fingers pointing outward.
Go, greased lightning.
I chuckled.
Do girls have to play the boy parts?
I think our schools used to do shows together, like a couple decades back, but no more, so yeah,
she said.
You ever do a show?
My freshman year, I was Dr. Gibbs in our town.
Ah, I'd heard of the play but had never seen it.
That's the main guy's dad. So yeah, I was very believable in that role. Typecasting, really, seeing as I had such a terrific role model of a father.
Of course.
Actually, George Gibbs, the main guy, is basically you. A baseball star whose goal is to go to college. Well, agriculture school.
I winced. So he's really like the inverse of me, since I come from a farm and have no interest in going back to one ever.
Right, I guess,
she said. But I could tell she was distracted.
What's up?
I said. She sat down on the stage, and I sat next to her. Her scent was like cold air and wintergreen tic-tacs.
Nothing. Just a little nervous.
I know. Me too.
She ran her hand through her hair.
It's just, you know, there's always been a barrier between us, and now there's, like, no barrier.
We don't have to do anything, I said. She smiled.
You're literally perfect, she said.
Yeah, perfect, I said, thinking about my remedial calculus studying. That's me.
Why do you do that?
Do what?
That thing where you treat yourself like a piece of crap?
It doesn't matter, I said.
It does matter. Ben, you're one of the good ones. Do you know how different you are from Cliff?
Cliff was the highly regrettable person from Natick she dated before me. I shrugged.
How fast of a runner are you?
Non sequitur alert.
Pretty fast.
Good. Because if someone comes in here, I need you to jet. I can be in here, that's not a problem. You in here with me would be the end of my academic career, I think. And as much as rebelling against Daddy sounds like a good plan, being expelled would seriously suck.
We don't have to do this, I said.
I want to.
Okay. I promise, the moment we hear something, I'm gone. Do you think that's gonna happen?
I don't know. Here's to hopefully not getting expelled for bringing my boyfriend into the theater, she said.
I felt heat throughout my body. She'd never used that word before. Hear, hear, I replied.
And to us, she said. I really like us. Is that weird to say? I just feel like we fit together somehow.
Yeah, I said, and the blood went to my face. This was happening. I took hold of her hand and traced her palm with my index finger. So, will you be my date to the Valentine's Day dance? The dance was one of two formals held during the year. The one in the fall was held at Lana Grace, and this one was a week away next Saturday night at Natick. I had mixed feelings about the dances, because I did love to dress up formally and see everyone in their suits and all the girls in pretty dresses. But I owned just one ratty suit, which I'd inherited from my dad in 9th grade. It was a little small for me now, and there wasn't much I could do about it. She said.
Really?
What? You don't want to go? She took her hand back and put it in her lap.
I don't want to broadcast our relationship, she said. As soon as I do, you know what's going to happen? Rhonda and all her minions will figure out how to get your number, and they'll start texting you.
Rhonda was the girl who had written, Hannah munches rugs on Hannah's door. I don't text, I reminded her, and she laughed a little.
Well then, we should be all set.
Come on, I said.
It'll be fun. I want to slow dance with you.
She sighed and rolled her head back.
I must really like you, because I swore I'd never give them more ammunition. Fine.
Good, I said. Excellent. She jumped up. Come with me, she said. I stood up too. Where are we going?
Backstage. I think we're too exposed here.
That sounded pretty good to me. Backstage, we took our jackets off and lay them down on the cold black floor. She sat and then reclined on her jacket, and then she patted mine. I tentatively stretched out next to her.
It felt so good, feeling the heat of her body next to mine. I sighed.
This is nice, I said.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She turned to face me, and she rested the side of her head on her hand. Cliff broke up with me via text message.
Oh, man, I said.
Yeah, he did it after we had sex for the first time.
That sucks.
It wasn't great, no. I thought he was better than that. So, you know, I am trying to figure out if you're better than that.
I took her small hand in mine. What do you think?
I think you are.
That's the mystery of life. Not finding out that someone isn't all that great, but you get to know someone, and over time, you figure out that they aren't exactly like the fantasy you've created in your mind about them.
That's deep, she said.
I like this part. I like both parts, I guess. I like the fantasy, and I can't wait to find out exactly who you are, too.
Her eyes lit up, and this time I kissed her, and she put her hands on my chest, and I put my free arm around her and pulled her into me. I'm ready to go further, she said, and I moaned as my body reacted to her words.
I don't have protection.
Her sweet expression, the way the skin around her eyes slightly creased when she smiled, was unforgettable to me.
I do, she said.
Driving back to school in my car, I laughed most of the way. Joy is such an amazing feeling, like you can't get enough oxygen in your head, or you just want more and more and more of the moment, and the car ride home, it could have taken forever because I was feeling so much joy traveling through my spent body. Hannah, my girlfriend Hannah, the first girlfriend I'd ever had who felt right. I felt like I could talk to her. Maybe not exactly like I could talk to Rafe or Bryce, but close. And I couldn't wait to talk to her on the phone the next day and share this laughter with her, because somehow I knew that at that very second, she was laughing too. Chapter 22. After Wednesday's practice, Mendenhall caught up to me walking across the quad back to the dorms.
You're doing good, he said. Really?
I didn't reply.
The only thing is this. Talk more, Carver. You eat meals with us, but you barely say anything. That's not captain-like. You don't have to be center of everything. You just need to contribute, you know? I mean, you're never going to be the funny one or the cool one, but you could be part of things. People like you.
Thanks, I said as we got to the dorm. I'll try.
Mendenhall charged upstairs ahead of me, and as I climbed the stairs, I thought about what he'd said. I'd never be the funny one? No, maybe I would never be the greatest joke teller, but I definitely love to laugh. I just had different ideas than Mendenhall about what was funny. Bryce, for example. Albie and Toby. Those guys made me laugh. The mainstream stuff that made Mendenhall cackle was usually really crude and mean. But Bryce's stuff could be mean, too, just mean in a different way. Albie and Toby, too. I'd have to figure that puzzle out someday. I was just quiet. I didn't feel the need to tell people every little thing about me. Like, I'm sure if Mendenhall had been in my shoes the previous Friday night, he'd have been bragging about what happened backstage in the Lana Grace Auditorium. I hadn't told anyone. That was just who I was, and I was fine with it. After changing, I went to the library and raced through my other work, intent on saving the evening for calculus. I wrote an essay for history about manifest destiny. I wrote a dry page about Freud's theory of displacement for psychology, ignoring the niggling fact that displacement sounded like a bunch of bullshit to me. I did some chemistry homework and my English reading, and I was done in plenty of time to devote a night to math. Joy. Then I thought about Model Congress and remembered that we had to go through the historical folder of arguments and refute one. The school kept copies of every Model Congress argument since the program began in 1965. I had 1 week before it was due, but I decided to pick an argument to refute. I got the folder from the librarian and began to page through it year by year. When I got to 1967, I got shivers up and down my arms when I saw Peter Pappas's name listed on the roster. I was going to find a Pappas argument, and I was going to refute it. His first argument, typewritten on thin yellowing paper, was in favor of passing the Equal Rights Amendment for women. I read through it, and he did a good job of using conditions of rebuttal and making an impassioned plea for gender equality. I couldn't imagine arguing against him there, since, obviously, I agreed. His second one caught my attention. It was a fervent diatribe against escalation in the Vietnam War. Against. Shivers. In the argument, Pappas gave the data about how the number of American troops in Vietnam had escalated from 189,000 in 1965 to 385,000 in 1966, and how approximately 17 Americans were dying there every day. Then he went into the root causes of the conflict, going all the way back to 1945 when the United States refused to do what it normally did and sympathize with revolutionaries against colonial powers. France, in this case. He argued that by backing France and by paying heed to the idea of a domino theory by which we might lose control of Southeast Asia to communism, we started down an incorrect path. He concluded with a humanitarian plea, writing that the human cost of this war was greater than the ideological need to fight communism. He used the example of a family in Boston that had already lost two sons and ended by saying, "How many more families must lose their children over a struggle that has nothing to do with them? Defending democracy in our homeland would be one thing. Defending it around the globe with the blood of our own soldiers is reprehensible and must be stopped." I put the yellowing pages down gently. The irony. A man who had died in a war arguing against that war. The Model Congress teacher must have pulled a Mr. Sachs and had students argue against their own beliefs. But Pappas had done it so much better than I could, and again I found myself wondering if I deserved this award. There was no way I'd be able to argue so passionately against my own beliefs about a topic such as war. I chose a random argument from the 1980s about Reaganomics. I wasn't taking on Peter Pappas. No chance in the world. I went to dinner and made sure to be part of the conversation. It was about the Red Sox, which I actually knew something about, so I said a few things about the team's prospects for the upcoming year, and Mendenhall smiled at me like he was a proud father, which was weird. Back in my room after dinner, I couldn't stop thinking about Pappas. He clearly had it all figured out. Not only could he write amazing, impassioned arguments against his own beliefs, but he'd probably fit in with his teammates better than I ever would. I imagined him laughing with his buddies 50 years ago at the same table we'd just sat at, and a chill went down my spine. By the time I picked up my calculus book at around 7:30 p.m. and started to study, I was feeling pretty damned inferior. They gave this award to straight-A student-athletes who were popular. I was 0 for 2. And how would it feel if I had to tell my dad that they'd taken the award away from me when they figured out I wasn't good enough? My brain got going pretty good on that subject, and as I stared at page after page of calculus equations, my stomach felt queasy. The numbers blurred together. I began to wonder why they chose dy and dx, and why you couldn't just get rid of the D's, since they should cancel themselves out, and then that felt like a moronic idea. "You're stupid. You'll never understand this. You've reached your math limit. They'll laugh at you when the award is taken away from you and given to someone more deserving." I slammed my book shut and threw it at the wall above the other bed. It smacked the wall hard and fell onto the mattress, with the cover hyperextending open. I put my head in my hands. Shit, shit, shit! Then I stared out the window and tried to come up with a solution. There was none. I took a break and wandered down the hall until I heard some noise. It was coming from Steve and Zach's room, and it sounded like laughter. I paused before knocking.
I wanted diversion, but was this the diversion I wanted?
More laughter streamed out of the room.
Screw it, why not?
I knocked.
Carver!
Steve whispered when he opened the door.
Get the hell in here! We're messing with Mendenhall!
Mendenhall's room was next door, so I automatically looked at the adjoining wall. Steve and Zack were hovering over a computer.
Uh-oh, I said. What are you doing to him?
Steve said,
We created an imaginary girlfriend for him. Her name is Brandy Lovelace. She goes to Lana Dyke.
I tried to make sure my wince at the slur wasn't visible.
Brandy Lovelace sounds made up. How long have you been doing this?
Like 3 hours,
Steve said, and I moved closer so I could see what they'd done. Some social media site was open, and the profile picture showed a pretty blonde girl in a bikini. She looked a little bit like a female version of Standish, complete with a surfboard at her side.
You guys are going to hell, I said, laughing.
Have they met yet? Mendenhall is online, and we just chatted him. We had to make sure her profile was filled out completely, and we even got her some other friends so she doesn't look made up.
I admire your stick-to-itiveness.
He answered,
Steve said, slithering into the seat in front of the computer.
He said, What up?
I watched the screen. Steve typed, I'm good. Go to Lana Grace. You Natick? Mendenhall typed back, Yep. Brandy, you're cute. Tommy, you too. Brandy, what are you doing? Tommy, studying. Brandy, you. Brandy, are. Brandy, crazy. Tommy, lols. Brandy, wanna hang out sometime? Tommy, hells yeah.
Hells yeah? I asked. Is that what the kids are saying these days?
Dude is a mess, yo,
Zack said.
Ask him if he has condoms.
Brandy, you have protection? Tommy, yep, got it all taken care of. You know how to get here? I can sneak you up.
No shit,
Zack said.
Boy has game.
Gotta up the ante, Steve said, typing.
Brandy, sure, cutie. Can I come now?
Hey now,
Zack said. I laughed. Tommy, you got it.
You just gonna stand him up?
I asked. Steve shrugged.
I'll keep him on the hook all night if I gotta. Dude's gonna be tired and pissed tomorrow.
Brandy, tell me where to go. Be there in 20. Tommy, I'll text you directions.
Shit,
Steve said.
He has all our numbers. Unless,
he looked at me.
Mendenhall have your number?
I shook my head. I don't use texting. Steve scowled at me.
You don't text? What the fuck?
I shrugged. Zack jumped up.
I have an emergency phone, he said. My dad thinks I need to have a backup.
I resisted rolling my eyes as Zack rummaged through some drawers.
I got an idea, I said. I need some supplies, though.
This got Steve's attention.
What's the plan?
He asked. I shook my head.
Do you trust me?
This better be good,
Steve said.
Better than keeping him up all night, I promise,
I said, thinking about what Mendenhall had said to me earlier.
You're never gonna be the funny one.
So when Zack found the phone, and while Mendenhall exchanged numbers with Brandy, I got going. I collected 3 pillows, one each from me, Steve, and Zack, some duct tape, and some magic markers. While Mendenhall and Brandy went back and forth with their plan, which utilized the broken bathroom window on the first floor, I worked on my art project. I taped the pillows together, convinced Steve to part with a blue pillowcase, which I fashioned into a skirt, drew a face and blonde hair on the top pillow, and then added boobs for good measure. When Steve saw what I was creating, he cracked up.
Okay, he said. Not bad.
I didn't even have to explain what I was doing. When I finished a few minutes later, Brandy was a pretty primitive-looking topless girl in a blue skirt with an idiotic grin on her face. We stood and admired the spooky piece of art.
"You're twisted," Steve said to me, and I smiled, proud of my handiwork.
When we heard Mendenhall sneak down the hallway a few minutes later, we sprung into action. I carried our pillow girl to Mendenhall's room while Zack stood watch. His door was unlocked, thankfully. Once in his room, I tucked Brandy into Mendenhall's bed, and I got the hell out of there. When we were safely reassembled in Steve's room, Zack texted Mendenhall. "Brandy, I came and you weren't there. I left. Sorry. Good night." "Tommy, I was there. WTF? Brandy didn't answer. We sat quietly and waited. Finally, we heard him walking back to his room down the hallway. We heard him open his door.
"What the fuck?"
We heard him yell through the wall, and we collapsed onto the floor and writhed in silent hysterics. "Brandy, I was in your room."
"Who the fuck did this?"
he yelled, and Zack jumped up and turned off the light and closed the computer. Steve jumped into his bed and hid under the covers. Zack burrowed down under the comforter on his bed, and I hid under Steve's. We braced for Mendenhall's entrance. The door cracked open. Light streamed into the room. Steve fake snored, and I held my breath. The light stayed for a few moments, and then quietly the door closed again. We all stayed very still as we heard Mendenhall walk farther down the hall looking for the guilty party.
"Epic," Steve whispered. "Nice work, Carver."
"I aim to please," I whispered back, a huge smile on my face. Chapter 23.
"Give me a tour of your room," Hannah said to me via Skype on Thursday night, 2 days before the dance. Part of me was already plotting a way to bring her up here, even though Headmaster Taylor had made it very clear that anyone found bringing a girl into the dorms would be suspended, no questions asked.
"We've Skyped like 5 times, I said.
"Yes, but I've never gotten the full tour."
I slowly spun the computer. "There's a door. There's a closet. There's a bed. There's a desk. There's another bed."
"You'd be like the worst real estate agent ever. More detail. I want to experience the place."
I sighed dramatically and brought the computer back to my face so she could see my look of mock annoyance. "Fine. There's my bed. It's a standard dorm mattress, probably made of whatever it is they make mattresses with, or whatever they made mattresses with in 1965. The bedding includes a red wool blanket, which my mother knitted for me. It's very warm and a little scratchy."
"Stuffed animals?"
she asked.
"Seriously,
you think I'm harboring stuffed animals in here? You haven't spent much time at an all-boys school, have you?"
"I didn't know you were so concerned about what the other boys thought of you."
"There's a difference between being concerned about what others think of you and having a flock of plush teddy bears," I said. She giggled.
"Fair enough. Do you want to see my stuffed animals?"
"I would like nothing better in the entire world." She moved her computer to face her bed. I hadn't taken her for a girl who would have a flowery comforter and 3 stuffed animals perched on it, but there they were, a pink bear, a light blue elephant, and a yellow bird of some sort.
"This is Teddy," she said in a cute voice I hadn't heard her use before.
"No, you haven't named your teddy bear Teddy." She focused the camera on her face and turned down her lower lip.
"I know you're not making fun of Teddy."
"No. Far be it from me to do something like that," I said. "I love Teddy."
"Good. Teddy loves you too, though Ellie is not yet sold on you."
"And Ellie is, I am guessing, the elephant?"
"I got her when I was 6 from my dad. I was crying because I wanted a stuffed animal, and he promised to go get me one, and instead of going to Walmart or Target or something normal like that, he went to Pottery Barn. I'm serious, he got me this extremely scratchy brown giraffe that wasn't soft or cuddly at all. I started screaming, apparently, and my mom went out to Walmart at like 10 at night and got me Ellie. She and I have been inseparable ever since.
That's really sweet, I said. How do I get on Ellie's good side?
You'll have to meet her, she said.
I felt my face heating up.
Tell Ellie I'm excited to make her acquaintance. We were quiet for a while, just staring into each other's eyes on the computer screen. I finally shook my head.
What?
She asked. I can't wait to dance with you, I said. I can't wait. You're the only boy in the world who could convince me to go to a formal at Natick. I hope you know that. I blew her a kiss. I'll make it worth your while, I said. An hour later, Rafe and I were studying in my room. I was working on calculus with a side of SAT words, because that was coming up too. I had just taken a math test and had no idea how I'd done, even after I'd restudied the entire textbook two nights earlier. There was another test coming up the next week, and I figured with another all-nighter the night before, I'd be in reasonably good shape. I could do this. I was also still thinking about meeting Ellie, as it were.
Well, you're in a good mood,
Rafe said, watching me, and I smiled and put my book away.
I am, I said.
You too, huh?
He gave me this shit-eating grin, and I gave him one back, and I started to laugh.
Okay, are we going to talk about the obvious elephant in the room?
He asked. I immediately thought of Ellie, and then remembered Rafe had no idea who Ellie was. I closed my textbook and put it down on the bed next to me.
And what elephant, pray tell, would that be?
You know how I said I couldn't handle it if you were hanging out with Hannah and I didn't want to hear about it? I think I'm changing my mind. Because, I mean, look at you. You're all happy and everything.
I couldn't avoid smiling.
Guilty. It's Hannah, isn't it?
I don't know.
He stared at me, and under the weight of his scrutiny, I rolled my eyes. He smiled in a way that I wasn't sure was happy or not.
I kind of thought so.
Is that okay to say? He flopped down on the bed.
You know what?
Sure.
If you and I can't, you know, be like that. Sure. I mean, Jeff isn't you and he'll never be you and he's shallow and he's afraid of his own gay shadow and all that. But we have fun. And I guess you're having fun too?
I nodded and nodded and nodded and nodded, and Rafe broke out in giggles.
It's funny because it's awkward, he said.
I know, I'm sorry. Can we just get past the awkward? He came over and sat next to me, and I froze up a little. He put his hand on my shoulder, and then he put his chin on his other hand.
I'll always love you, Ben. Magenta. But yeah, I can deal. I'll be like the best man at your wedding.
I couldn't quite look at him with his face so close. And I'll officiate your wedding. You and Jeff.
Yay! Oh, please. No wedding is forthcoming, I promise. We do not talk well.
I kept staring straight ahead, my heart pulsing, and Rafe seemed to get the message and stood up, stretching. Then he lunged back toward the other bed and grabbed his Norton anthology.
Yay, Beowulf!
It's great that the teachers here are finding work that really resonates with the youth of today.
Truly, I said. Truly.
I'm proud of you, Ms. Dyson said as I gathered up my books after calculus class the next day. You obviously took what I said to heart. Look what you can do when you put your mind to it.
It was only an 86, I said.
She put her hands on her hips. Did you study hard?
I studied all night.
Well then, looks like you're a B student in calculus. There are worse things to be. I'm really proud of you. You're putting in the effort and you're getting good results.
I'm a B student?
I wasn't used to working that hard and getting a B. Was that acceptable? I wondered what my dad would say if I told him. Would he tell me to study harder? Was that possible? I was juggling so many things, and I wasn't sure what else I could do. At least a B was good enough for me to keep the award and scholarship. That was worth something, I guess.
I'm very proud of you, she repeated.
Yes, ma'am, I said.
She laughed. Ben Carver, you're the only student in all of Natick who calls me ma'am. It's partially insulting and partially wonderful.
I shrugged and laughed a little. I guess I was raised to call people ma'am and sir, I said.
Well, you're a throwback. You work hard, you're polite, you're an athlete, and a scholar. No wonder they gave you the award. You really deserve it, Ben.
Thanks, ma'am, I said. But I was thinking about limits. In basic calculus, we learn to find the limit of a particular function. I'd never thought that it had meaning out in the real world. Had I found my own limit? And what if your limit is unacceptable to you?
In baseball practice later on Friday, I took aside some of the freshmen while Coach Donnelly was doing base running drills. I wanted to try something I'd never seen a captain do before, but I'd always thought would have been good when I was a younger player.
So I wanted to give you a chance to ask questions, I said to the group. When I was in my first year playing, nobody told us anything, and I think we were supposed to just stay quiet and not worry about the things we didn't know. I hated that. Anything I can do to make you feel more confident out there, I want to do. Any questions?
The guys looked at one another almost like they thought this was a trap. I couldn't blame them. Just a month ago, they were being asked to crawl around a cold and wet locker room floor. This was different.
Said Peterson. When do we find out what team we made?
I laughed. Sorry, I'm laughing because I remember having the same question and wondering why no one let us know the answer. Coach Donnelly usually creates the freshman and JV rosters right after spring break. Peterson nodded, relieved that I hadn't barked at him for asking a question, I guess.
What if we want to try out for a position that he didn't put us at?
Clement asked.
Let me know, I said. Coach is pretty rigid once he puts you somewhere, but if you really want to switch things up, maybe I can put in a word.
This kid Martin raised his hand meekly.
Any chance a freshman can make varsity?
It's happened, but it's really rare. I made it sophomore year, but not freshman.
They were all just standing there, so I said, anything else? They shook their heads no, so I motioned for everyone to go back to base running drills.
Thanks, Clement said to me quietly as we broke up. That helped.
Don't worry about it, I said, feeling warm inside. Not a problem.
Chapter 24. I showed up at the dance 5 minutes early in case Hannah got there early too. The gym was nearly empty still, so I lingered at the door for as long as I could before it felt even more awkward to be standing there than to be inside. So I wandered over to the punch bowl and ladled myself a glass. It was pure, colored sugar water, not even fruit-flavored.
Carver, what's up?
Steve yelled over to me as the baseball guys arrived in a pack. They skulked to the back, which was generally how things went at parties. The guys talked a big game with girls, but at parties and dances, they'd start out shy and aloof, and then at some point, someone would break the ice, and they'd act like it hadn't been awkward 10 minutes earlier.
Hey, I said, tossing my punch and walking over to them. I high-fived a few guys. Everyone was wearing a jacket and tie, and the girls were beginning to arrive in dresses. I felt kind of embarrassed about my suit, though Rafe had helped me out by lending me a sharp black-and-white tie.
I didn't think you'd be coming, Mendenhall said, looking at my suit jacket like you might look at a pile of horse manure.
I still couldn't quite look him in the eye after the pillow incident.
Never one to miss a part.
I paused, because I'd been about to say partay, the irony of which only Rafe would get since it was an inside joke.
Party, I said.
The guys from the team milled around, establishing their dominance by putting each other in headlocks.
It was obvious they were showboating for the girls on the other side of the auditorium, and the girls pretended they were oblivious to this fact. I felt a hand tap me on my back. I turned, and it was Rafe.
"Yo, what up, blood?"
he said, and I stifled a laugh. He was parodying the way my teammates talked to one another. "Hey," I said. Under his dapper black jacket, he had eschewed a shirt and tie and was instead wearing a form-fitting turquoise t-shirt that I'd never seen before. I knew Rafe wasn't exactly a fashion magnate, so I figured this was his friend Claire Olivia's work, via FaceTime, probably.
"Well, this is exciting," I said, referring to the dance.
"Yep." Behind him, Jeff approached us. His wavy blonde hair was just perfect, like a Ken doll's.
"Hey," I said, making sure to sound friendly. I stuck out my hand.
We knew each other only tangentially.
"Hey," he said, and I could swear he lowered his voice. I looked at Rafe, wondering what he'd told Jeff about me, if anything.
Rafe clapped his hands together as if to break the awkwardness of the moment.
"Well," he said, "as soon as those girls get wind of who the gay guys are, my dance card is going to be filled for a million years."
I had no idea what that meant, but I laughed anyway.
"Girls love to dance with gay guys," Rafe said, translating.
"Ah." Jeff shook his head like he was embarrassed, and he walked away. Rafe looked at me and shrugged. I shrugged back.
"Is the famous Hannah here yet?"
he asked.
"The famous Hannah is not here yet, no."
I worried that maybe she'd changed her mind. Toby and Albie appeared. Toby was wearing a powder blue jacket with a sequined rose brooch. His pink hair was spiked taller and slicker than usual, and again, he was wearing eyeliner. Albie was wearing a black t-shirt under a black blazer. He looked like a bouncer at a comics convention.
"And then there are gay guys who girls don't particularly want to dance with," Rafe said, hugging Toby.
Toby made a big show of checking out Rafe.
"Is that a roll of quarters in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?"
I looked around, hoping no one was hearing this.
"Neither,"
Rafe said, deadpan. Toby said, "Ha!" really loud, and then made a big show of pretending to see someone across the room, waving ecstatically and then walking away. Albie skulked after him.
"Anyway, gonna see what's up with Jeff," Rafe said, and I told him I'd catch him later and watched him walk away. As I scanned the crowd for Hannah, Mendenhall approached me.
"What's up with you and the gay kids?" he said.
"Two gay kids and one straight kid," I corrected him. "Rafe is my best friend."
"He doesn't hit on you?"
"Nah, I'm not his type," I said.
"What is?"
I looked at Mendenhall and took a calculated risk. "Sort of the antithesis of you," I said. "Handsome, smart."
"Cool. I give you a lot of shit, but I think it's cool you're so open-minded. Junior year, there was this gay college football player."
"I was here," I interrupted. "I was a sophomore."
"Right. Well, that was different. I mean, he definitely wasn't like a stereotypical fag or something."
My eyes got big, but Mendenhall was oblivious.
"I guess nowadays all kinds of dudes are that way. I mean, I wouldn't, but whatever I mean."
"Sure.
Anyways, I think it's cool, but I probably wouldn't be friends with a kid like that."
"Sure," I said. "You have a reputation to uphold with the ladies."
"Check that," he said. "You grew up on a farm, right?"
I nodded.
"Uh-huh."
He shook his head.
"Lucky."
"Why?"
He shook his head harder and laughed. His gaze was distant.
"You have no idea. The pressure. My dad expects me to follow in his footsteps. I don't give a shit about finance. If I could, I'd just work on cars. Not good enough for my dad."
"That's rough," I said, and I meant it. Maybe our families were from different worlds, but our dads certainly had some things in common. Mine thought I was interested in a lot of foolishness, too.
Mendenhall nodded and nodded, and I glanced around again for Hannah, and thankfully, there she was.
"Excuse me," I said, and I hurried over to her. She was wearing a pale green, low-cut dress that showed off her beautiful legs.
Her hair was done up in a bun, and I couldn't stop smiling.
"Well, you're a sight for sore eyes," I said.
"Sorry, took me a second to get up the courage to come in," she said.
"Really?"
She was acting weird, standing really still.
"Are they looking at us?"
I glanced around. A couple tall, skinny girls were, in fact, sizing me up.
"I don't know. Does it matter?"
She sighed.
"It shouldn't, I know. I just get nervous, is all."
"You look so beautiful," I said. I took her hand in mine, and I leaned in and kissed her. That seemed to do the trick. Hannah smiled and looked at the ground, only a little flustered. Her face was red.
"Come on," I said. "You haven't lived until you've had a sip of red-colored sugar water, and you really haven't lived until you've seen me dance."
I pantomimed a little arm dance to the beat of the music.
"Look who's coming out of his shell," she said.
"What can I say? I'm happy."
"Me too,"
she said. We danced to a bunch of songs I didn't know, and Hannah was about as bad at dancing as I was from the looks of it. She kept her feet in the same place and just sort of bopped and swayed. It was adorable, and I didn't give a shit if people thought we were the world's worst dancing couple. Hannah excused herself to go to the bathroom, and of course Steve and Zach ran up to me as soon as she was gone.
"Carver,"
they said,
"score!"
"She's nice," I said.
"Yeah, you been hanging out? How come you didn't tell us?"
I shrugged. I'm a private person.
"I get that, dude. Good stuff. She's kinda hot," Steve said.
They walked off, and then one of the blonde girls who had been sizing me up walked over.
"You're dating Hannah Stroud?"
"Yep." I didn't look at her.
"You can do better."
"I doubt it," I said, and the girl shook her vapid head and walked away. Hannah came back from the bathroom, and I resisted the urge to tell her about her blonde friend, who may or may not have been Rhonda Peterson. I pulled her to me just as a slow song began.
"Come on,"
I said, and she tentatively walked out to the dance floor with me. I put my arms around her and held her close. We rocked side to side to the music.
"I don't know any of the steps, so this will have to suffice," I said.
She put her cheek on my chest.
"It's so much more than suffices," she said.
As we danced, I knew everyone was watching us, and I felt an odd sense of pride. I'd spent my life afraid to do the wrong thing, and suddenly, these past few days, that part of me was disappearing, and I was feeling confident. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Rafe sitting in the bleachers alone. His posture was bad, and I knew what had happened. My heart sunk a bit.
"Shit," I said.
"What?"
"My buddy Rafe. I think his boyfriend just dumped him."
I resisted the urge to spin so that she could see him. Rafe and Hannah meeting was something I'd thought about leading up to the dance, but I wasn't sure how that would go. And moreover, I wasn't sure I wanted them to meet yet.
"That sucks," she said.
The slow song ended, replaced by something a little peppier. I pulled back.
"Would you mind terribly?"
"Oh,"
she said, and she looked down at the floor for a moment. Then she looked back up at me and smiled, crossing her arms over her chest.
"Not at all. You want me to come too? I'm good at cheering people up."
"I think I'd better..."
"Sure,"
she said.
"He's your best friend. I wouldn't mind going back to school early."
"You don't have to."
"No, I made an appearance here. That's good enough."
"You sure? If you want, I could try to find a place."
She smiled more.
"It's okay, Ben. Do what you have to do. I'm okay, really. A little bit of a formal dance goes a long way with me."
"Me too."
I pulled her close and kissed her softly on the lips.
"Sleep tight," I said. "You got a ride home?"
She nodded.
"Sleep tight,"
she said. When she left, I walked over to Rafe. He looked more deflated than I'd ever seen him look before.
"Hey," I said, sitting down next to him.
"Hey."
His voice lacked its usual color.
What happened?
I told him to fuck off. He wasn't willing to dance with me.
Shit. I'm not hanging out with a guy who's afraid to be seen with me. Fuck that.
I put my arm around him. I'm sorry, I said.
Yeah.